He's meaty. He's got a stake in many sports. That's why they call him Beefy.
Yes, indeed.
How are you, Beefy?
I'm good, funny. How was your weekend?
Good. I worked a bit on the weekend. I can see them up on the TV screens now. I had the Sandringham Dragons annual best and fairest. And, given that the game's been played on Fox now, maybe some don't know the results. I won't say what happened in the game, but I can certainly tell you that they've got a number of players that will be AFL footballers next year. It's always great to host that function. And yesterday, came in here to do some work with Scott Lucas on air. So I made it an abbreviated weekend. Couldn't really get stuck
into
much else.
Have they got players ready for the draft?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. They'll have a couple probably in the top 15, maybe top 10.
Okay.
Last year they had the number one draft pick, Andy McGrath, who won the National Rising Star Award, the NAB Rising Star Award. And they're a good organisation, Sandringham, and their past players are more than happy to come back. And he came back, so I had a good chat on stage with him. You know, number one draft pick and lived up to it by winning that major award. A very good player for Essendon, set to move in the midfield. So, yeah, they've been strong contributors to the AFL system for a long time, and at the moment they're really providing some top-end talent.
And the VFL clubs actually get financially compensated, don't they, if players get drafted?
No, they don't.
Is that the youth, like TAC and schools?
Yeah, that's just a system that most of the players come through the in Victoria, the TAC Cup, and it's a bit different in interstate football. In WA and South Australia, they actually come through the club system and end up in the Sandful or the Waffle. But there's no financial compensation to the clubs that they leave. The TAC competition is the under-18 elite pathway system here in Victoria now for boys and girls, and that's funded by the AFL.
Yep.
So it's very hard as the clubs, or the organisations or programs, at times not sure what to call themselves. So are the Sandringham Dragons a club? Not really.
Yep.
But they have a lot of the philosophies and ethos of a club because they want their players to care for each other, and football doesn't work unless really you are a club.
Yep.
So officially I think they're called programs.
Okay.
But the programs that do best are the ones that best mimic actual clubs.
Right. So money's not really a critical changing point for those programs that setup.
No, the programs are funded.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there would not be, other than through the TAC Cup, I cannot think of any clubs that, there might be some very young clubs, but there aren't clubs that end at under 18 level or under.
Okay, they're juniors only, basically. Yeah,
and there are clubs that are just junior clubs, and they're often in sort of expanding areas of Melbourne. So So somewhere like one of those springs or palms or lakes,
Caroline Springs and Craigieburn and Upper Berwick,
newer suburbs that have names like the sort of things you might see on the Truman Show. I know that some of them start off because of the demographic. You know, they've got young families there, so they start off as junior clubs. But the aim is, as the players grow, so the club grows with them, and eventually they field senior teams.
Yep.
The design here is to be an under-18 program, and they think they also have an age group under that as well. So the program is specifically a talent pathways program.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's interesting to know because, obviously, in terms of my education, I've been in Melbourne probably 14 years, but still don't quite understand.
Yeah, apparently I've been told by Luke and Mentone that the junior football club that the players get drafted for.
Oh, the junior football club. Money. I did hear that there was some, but I wasn't quite aware of
I don't think it's a significant amount.
Yeah.
But that's
it's enough to keep these clubs going, and
I don't know if it's that significant.
Yeah,
I think it's just recognition, a bit of an award, a bit of a prize.
Nice. Okay. Oh, fair enough. Yeah, like I said, it's one of those things you know if you're not involved with Aussie rules across the board, you don't quite understand kind of the we like to call it a pyramid system where, you know, it trickles down. And,
yeah, we
know,
call it the pathways.
Yeah.
For elite young AFL football, AFL people who play AFL, or traditionalists prefer to call it Australian rules. I mean, that's another thing. If I'm sure you've been immersed at some point in the nomenclature battle between football and soccer.
I live it every day.
Soccer fans don't exist because there's only football fans and those who call it soccer.
Yeah,
in Australia.
It's only two countries in the world that call it soccer, really, isn't it? It's Australia and America.
Yeah. But it was called soccer in England.
Yeah, well, it's a shortening. It was a shortening of association football in the kind of mid-1880s. I mean, they basically... association was shortened to SOC, and that's how it came about, which not many people know. So it was actually the Brits that
created the word soccer.
Anyway,
so that battle is publicly fought and really does mark one. And it's hard when you're on air because you know you want to talk about football, which I will gladly call it during the World Football Hour.
Yeah,
because you're speaking to the congregation.
Yeah.
But when it's an open-ended sporting hour.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, the difference is as well is you're in Victoria and Aussie rules is football. If you go to New South Wales, rugby league is football. And previously in Queensland, rugby union used to be football.
Yeah, that's right. So there's now a problem with Australian rules because sort of surreptitiously and sometimes, you know, almost by osmosis, one is supposed to have absorbed the fact that the game that we love to call footy is AFL.
Yes.
Now, that doesn't sit well at all with those of us who think it through and realise that AFL is actually just a very large...
organisation.
Organisation that runs the elite competition, the AFL, for 18 clubs. But it's only a league. So when this was a sort of a genesis of an idea... in Queensland and New South Wales, players started, you know, I didn't know this was happening, and this caught me off guard many, many years ago when I met somebody on the Gold Coast who said he played AFL. And I assumed, you know, he was on the then Brisbane Bears rookie list or supplementary list because I'd never heard of him. And as I further explored, he was a player for...
Southport or...
Yeah, he did play for Southport.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
But, you know, never, not close to being good enough to playing AFL football. But that's the first time I heard it referred to as AFL. But now...
Oh, it's becoming the...
As per Fox sports coverage, they call it... there's, I think, league... Football is the round ball game. Yep. AFL is AFL.
Yeah.
There's league and rugby.
Yeah. Which is probably about right.
The four sports.
Yeah. But, you know, in terms of that, I mean, you've got your Fox Footy channel, I guess, so that's it. And, I mean, I'm just looking behind you, finding. Look at the screens, the glorious new SEN screens.
Yeah, Melbourne's Home of Footy.
Melbourne's Home of Footy. And,
so, I mean, like to refer to it as footy or football, but the AFL has certainly not done anything to stop the engulfing of the term football by AFL.
Yeah.
And even in school, kids are asked, do you want to play AFL or basketball? And it's branding by, a little bit of branding by stealth. And if they're not actively involved in this happening, the AFL is certainly not doing anything to correct the... It should be called Australian Rules Football.
Yeah, and that's it. And I think the other side of things is it's coming into everyday life for like... You know, it's American football. We refer to that as a sport as NFL now.
Where it used to be gridiron.
Kind of gridiron and...
Yeah, I used to call it gridiron.
Yeah, and then if you go to the UK, it's, you know, straight out American football.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just seems to be kind of
NFL,
the...
NFL, The powerful money behind the sport, as in those cases, has got no problems with... Especially because they are sport-specific to one country.
Yeah.
So as the... And in America, there's not much American football besides the NFL.
Very little. Apart from, I mean, college is 100 times bigger.
College, in America, there's really college football and
but if you don't get drafted to the NFL out of college, you're basically done.
You don't play for your
local
team.
You probably play rugby. Yeah. There's a couple of leagues kicking around that try and keep guys in NFL, in American football to make that next step just in case. But
that's right. Canadian football.
Well, the CFL, indeed, that's quite interesting up there. 12 aside, bigger field, three downs. It's madness up there. But in terms of that, yeah, club gridiron is few and far between. Yeah. I mean, injuries are a huge thing.
A, there's injuries. B, the size required. If you were to mimic NFL. Yeah. I mean, there's stadium football there. There's versions of, but to mimic NFL, as we have here, the AFL, and then hundreds, thousands of teams that play basically the same game, there you need a huge number of teams. You need to be learning plays.
That's exactly right.
Who on earth is going to spend, if you're not a full professional, who on earth is going to spend their time, the time required to learn the system?
Oh, that's right. And the number of leagues that have popped up and failed after very short tenures is amazing. Like, we had the XFL, which was obviously owned by the wrestling people. We had a development league in the northeast of the states that kind of came and went after one season. The USFL, which Donald Trump was a part of, one of the clubs, that kind of came and went as a direct competitor to the NFL. And the NFL is just this huge juggernaut now that just keeps trekking on by. And in terms of any other club competitions, that it just nobody gets a look in. It's never going to get challenged again. It's become the world force in sports. I mean, it is bigger essentially now in turnover for money, even though there's a report out this week that kind of attendance is down, TV viewers are down like huge amounts, 18% or something ridiculous. So they're fighting a struggle, but it's one of these things that just keeps on moving along. And obviously they have the Super Bowl that just kind of captures everyone's imagination for one day of the year. And it's become this huge kind of focus of everything. And obviously the AFL now models itself on what the NFL is doing. So it's, you can't model yourself on a better league, even though sometimes that things are, a bit seedy sometimes in NFL circles, but in terms of where they're at, I'll tell you what I noticed.
Interesting you should mention, because we just had the Super Bowl rematch.
We did today, indeed.
No change in result.
No, apart from the New England got out to an early lead instead of coming from behind. Yeah. But in terms of that, what I was going to say is what I've noticed. I'm a huge NFL fan. I used to go to the States a lot to go and watch games. What I noticed over a time span is the huge Latino population in the States were picking up on NFL, and they were at the games in force, in numbers. So
that was the whole sort of belief in MLS, that the Latino population would flock to the MLS and turn it into one of the biggest leagues in the world.
Well, strangely enough, it kind of is, but in terms of quality, it isn't. But regarding that, and it's one of those interesting things how I think it's the same in Australia. The quality speaks for itself. So you will get spectators passing interest, but the diehard fan wants to see quality, and that's where the MLS doesn't quite equate. And obviously, the thing is, being so close to Mexico and South America, they very few follow a second team religiously. They want to follow their Flamencos and River Plates and Boca Juniors and Atlas in Mexico and all those. They're not glued on, nailed down diehards for the Galaxy or the San Jose Quakes or FC Dallas.
Their football passion is deep, but only for one club, and one alone. I can understand that.
Yeah, and that's it. If you're born and bred in those places, fair enough, but it's such a transient population that, it's very, very difficult to grow these things. And like I said, you can't grow these things overnight. The MLS and the teams there, it's 15, 20 years because it's generational. You need to get that second generation into the stadiums and into the clubs and learning the players. And we have the same issue with Australia. A lot of the time is the players you grow up loving, if they hit form, they're off. Yeah. So it's difficult to build those bridges and it's difficult to form that relationship. I think what we kind of missed in the A-League a little bit is a little bit of that tribal stuff, the ethnicity, which we try to, you know, there was bad things involved, obviously, with that. They had to eradicate it or dilute it a little bit. But we missed that. And I think the two Sydney teams, the team from Sydney and the team from Melbourne coming in to create a rivalry could only be a good thing.
Yep.
But unfortunately, they were 7-8 years behind in building their franchise. Hate that word, but there you go. It is, really.
Now, you may be able to answer this with your great depth and understanding of sports worldwide and their histories. I've always been curious as to how baseball has become in a difficult-to-plot geographically group of countries a major sport.
Yeah.
So I would just say in Central America there's a conglomeration.
Yeah. Well, you've got Cuba. It is there. Baseball is king.
National game.
Dominican Republic.
Huge.
Panama.
Huge. Yeah. Venezuela.
A little bit, yeah.
Then into Japan.
It's always a strange one, that.
Chinese Taipei.
Yeah, a little bit. They're more softball, weren't they, really? Chinese Taipei got behind it. Weirdly enough, Holland, for a long time, they've dropped off way now. But Holland were a kind of the top four or five in the world for a long time. But Australia, obviously. It's
Puerto Rico, of course, huge. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic.
The problem with the Cubans is they weren't allowed out.
Yeah.
They've got these huge leagues. They get massive crowds in dilapidated stadiums. But, I mean, the best players had to be smuggled out and under cloak of darkness and on boats and all sorts to try and get contracts in the States. But strangely enough, what Fidel kind of didn't realize at the time is that money was probably going to go back to Cuba. But he just wanted to keep his star players in Cuba for people to kind of, so they wouldn't even look to the States for a better life. That was part of the issue.
So was baseball in the early days, was it like a, what would you call it, proselytizing sport? Did they go out and attempt to win fans around the world?
I don't think they ever really did. I mean, it was one of those things that, obviously, baseball, it grew out of cricket. It was a bastardization, so to speak, of cricket over there. And they didn't really get out. I mean, the only people that took it overseas, I'm not sure about Central America and in the Caribbean and whatever, but obviously it was U.S. military bases, you know, posted overseas that played it, but they never obviously made any inroads in the UK because of cricket and other Commonwealth countries, but obviously Holland and Germany a little bit.
Philippines, no, but they're a huge presence there. It's just interesting how it has become imprinted on some countries and not others.
There you go. South Korea, they're another baseball nation. Yeah.
And, you know, these nations provide many players to Major League Baseball. The Central American countries, there's not a Major League team in America whose pitching staff, whose entire roster wouldn't be decimated without Latin American talent.
I know in Miami, you know, they try to build a team around Cubans in Miami to create this interest for the local population, because the Marlins struggled for a long time. Crowds dwindled and everything else. I know we used to have Dave Sampson on SEN in the mornings, and in terms of what they try to do is build up this huge team full of Latinos so that the local Cuban population could actually follow them and get behind them and actually learn to love them. You know, so they're going okay, the Marlins, but you know, you've got to build teams around. I mean, everything's about winning, and unfortunately, you get to see the Red Sox and the Yankees and a few other big name teams flaunt this soft salary cap and just end up paying fines, even though to build the biggest, most expensive rosters they can.
We're going to go to the break. We were talking earlier about Sandringham Dragons. I'm watching on Fox Football Charlie Constable having a shot at goal and kicking it straight through the middle, and he is a top 10 pick. He'll be at an AFL club next year, and he's a sort of larger, potentially midfielder, and with St Kilda, my team, having a pick at 7 and 8, I would love it to be C Constable.
Ooh.
It'd be very nice. So we're going to take a break and then get stuck into some cliff diving, dragon boat racing, polo. I say, polo. That's nice. Haven't visited. And dodgeball? Really? Not just a movie? We'll find out when we get back. Welcome back, 1116 SEN. And we are, oh, this is interesting. We've been discussing, we have our normal sports to go through with Kieran Beefy Blake, but have been diverted to a road not any less interesting. Talking a bit about how baseball has become prominent in some countries, not the other, and Beefy opined that it had to do with American forces.
Yeah.
Yeah, and confirmation here. Both Japan and South Korea picked up baseball from the American occupying forces after World War II and the Korean War. Cheers.
Yep. There you go. Well, it's kind of like, not military, but Afghanistan picked up cricket because of the refugees from Pakistan were literally kind of, they ran away into Afghanistan. They all played, they all started playing cricket, and the local Afghanis started playing with them. And it's grown from there, which is, it was just a phenomenal story, really.
Yeah.
And it grew very quickly.
And that influence, you know, there's sort of lists of countries' traditional or national sports.
Yeah.
I think we need to draw a line, because it's quite an interesting take between what is a traditional or cultural sport,
yep,
as compared to a national sport.
Yeah, exactly.
You gave the example during the break of Brazil.
People obviously think that the national sport of Brazil is football, because 99.9% of males, females, kids, unborn babies, pets and everything else play football. But their official national sport is capoeira, which is, well, it's not really even a sport. It's a kind of display of martial arts, and it's a kind of in unison type.
Like a tai chi for the
combative tai chi.
Yeah, tai chi for the more aggressive.
Yeah, but they love that, and it's like you said, it's cultural. You grew up doing capoeira, and it's one of those things that they're very proud of, and everything else.
So by definition, that means as a national sport, culturally,
yep,
only England could claim, or Britain could claim, football. It can only belong to one country.
Yes, basically. Unless we know that
most countries in the world,
yep,
have as their
main sport. Yeah, or most numerous, or most number of participants, I guess. I don't like saying, I mean, Argentina would be the same, but I know their national sport is polo.
Yeah.
Just culturally and everything else. But
put aside main sport, which is, of course, going to be football in most
countries. In a lot of countries,
A lot of countries, and basketball in others. And just in terms of main sport.
Yeah.
In parts of Europe, in Eastern Europe, volleyball's very strong.
Yeah. Croatia and Italy and places like that, yeah. Greece, obviously.
And there are certain countries where alpine sports really
Austria,
are...
Austria, yeah, I'll go to that saying, yeah.
Yeah, but in all of those countries, probably their main sport still remains as football.
Yeah.
But, you know, the sport akin to the culture. So on that basis, what's the national sport, do you know, of Jordan?
I've got no idea.
I can tell you it's of nowhere else.
Yes.
Falconry.
Oh, there you go. Same in UAE.
I said of nowhere else.
Yes.
In that
Middle East, yeah. But UAE, I think that's the national sport of UAE as well, is falconry. So probably Qatar as well, possibly.
Yeah, so
Saudis.
So I'm thinking, you know, every kid, remember growing up, you had your footy and your cricket bat. What was your first bat? A Gray Nichols? So do they have talk back there? How old were you when you got your first falcon?
Well, they have, you know, as well, they have falcon beauty contests. They have camel beauty contests as well in the UAE, but falcon beauty
contests.
That's
why you have to run.
You do, yeah.
You don't want to get an ugly one.
No, that's right. I know where you're going with that, and that's a kind of, that's a sheep joke as well, by the way. There you go. Didn't Afghanistan beat Bangladesh in Scotland in cricket in the World Cup? Well, I think they probably did.
Afghanistan and Ireland have been granted test status.
Yes.
They just have no test opponents.
No.
The test schedule's been done. So even though they've got test status.
Yeah. But I think, did I see on BBC the other week that Ireland had just announced they're going to play a test match next year?
Well, they may do. It won't be next year. I don't think it's next year.
Okay. All right.
The official word is that they both have test status.
Yeah, but nobody wants to play them because the schedules are already done.
As yet, you know, for the next...
Well, they'll just play each other for the next 3 years.
For the next 2 years,
it's a best of 46 series, home and away.
I remember how excited I was. It's just a different world we live in. I was so excited when Sri Lanka got test status.
Yep.
You know, because I had all my cricket scorebooks and and I followed Sri Lanka religiously through my first viewing of them at the 75 World Cup, the first ever World Cup.
Yep.
And for a short period, as I was an unusual child, on my... I always had...
Nothing's changed.
I always had sporting posters on my walls.
Yeah.
It's funny because I had a cork board. I had a desk. My parents wanted me to be studious.
Oh, yeah.
That desk was never used for study. And behind the desk was a cork board, apparently also helpful in turning child into doctor, but failed with me. And a globe, like a globe of the world.
Yeah.
Which I dehinged and used as a ball. So a very hard, painful ball. So I had... always had posters, normally on the corkboard, that was reserved for my favourite selection of...
Sri Lankan cricketers.
No, teams that I liked and odd teams from Shoot magazine.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, you know, I had Berry Football Club up there.
What a team.
And they were in the small... There was a smaller picture and a bigger picture.
Yeah.
But I liked the smaller teams. Shrewsbury Town.
Shrewsbury Town, a Gay Meadow.
Well, that's why, because it had, like, underneath play at Gay Meadow.
Yeah.
And then on the walls, which my mother didn't like because that involved sticky tape on the wallpaper.
Yep.
Which I'd love to say was flock, but it wasn't. It was normal wallpaper.
Yeah.
There used to be a cricket magazine that came out and it had full page colour pictures of
the Taverner.
I don't know what it was called.
Yeah.
I don't think it was called the Taverner.
Okay.
Maybe just Cricketer.
Yeah. Well.
But it had full, like, not even any borders or boundaries.
Yeah. And just a poster.
Just each page was just, you know.
Yeah.
And I would not see that again because that came out when I was about 10.
Oh, okay.
I would not see that again or that would not excite me again until I bought a certain publication called Electric Blue. But that's very different.
Went
to the very edges.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you that for a short period of time on my walls were no Australian cricketers. There was no West Ham. It was only on one ball, Berry and Shrewsbury, but I had Tennakoon. I had, I'll tell you the players I remember. A guy called Fernando.
There's probably a De Silva there.
I remember Tennakoon.
Yeah.
Fernando, Demel.
Kangaroo Boo.
Before
them.
Before them.
Yeah.
And their very foundation, Roy, a chap whose surname was Roy, and their sort of foundation members of 75. And when they got test status, I was so excited and then disappointed.
For the next 15
9 years or something till we played them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think our first test was in Kandy. Might be Roger Woolley's only test.
Oh, there you go. Hey, getting back to these national sports, we just mentioned Afghanistan. I think we said Buzkashi must be their national sport.
Oiled up wrestling?
No. Buzkashi is this... polo.
Oh, is that the polo with the man's head?
With the dead goat.
Oh, yeah, but originally.
As
a warrior nation.
No.
The urban myth?
I can give you the background. It's a village versus village sport. Now, you play polo with a decapitated goat's body.
Yeah.
Now, there's two wells, basically two holes, which are the goals. The idea is to get this decapitated goat's body into the well. Now, goats obviously weigh 50 or 60 kilos. Oh, by the way, you're on horseback.
Yes.
Trying to wrestle
this. So it's not gutted.
No, it's the only thing missing is his head.
Yeah.
So the idea is you fight for the body of the goat because that's how you feed your village. If you won, you won the goat and you get to cook it up. So that's how
it's been kicked around all day by stepped on.
Well, it's got skin and it's protected. Yeah. But for Rambo fans, that's how John Rambo tried to get the Afghans on side by playing Buzkashi with the locals to prove he was a man and get their support, apparently.
So I thought the urban legend myth behind it was that it used to be the head of a defeated foe.
Well, I think that is urban myth. I think it is because...
maybe not so urban, maybe rural.
Because as you well know, Fani, I actually went to Kazakhstan trying to seek out Buzkashi and didn't find it.
No?
less than 1% of the population in Kazakhstan speak English. Now, that's quite difficult when you're by yourself trying to work out how to find Buzhkashi.
So less than 1% speak English.
Less than 1% actually speak English. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. It's tough to get around. And
it's funny because I travelled in 1985 and then in 1989.
Yeah.
In 1985, there were many places I went to where English was spoken by very few people.
Yeah.
Then 1989... By then, it had improved. And as the years have gone on, I've been back overseas and found that the uptake in English has been huge around the world.
Yeah.
And I try to explain to my daughter, who travels quite a bit, that there was a time when English was only really got you to the pension front desk. Once you head out into the streets.
I'm talking about
Italy and places that are now, you know, so well trod by tourists that they just absolutely had to learn English. But there was a time the front desk at your hostel or pension,
that's the only people,
would and speak some broken English maybe.
No, exactly. And it's like, people think, you know, you see Kazakhstan or Mongolia or these places on TV. Yeah, there's a reason why it's on TV and why the people can speak English. They've been found. If you go by yourself, organized, you know, by yourself and just turn up and expect things to happen, it doesn't. And it's very difficult to work out. Like I said, trying to deal with the people in Kazakhstan about where I could find Buzhkashi by showing them pictures of the spot. And they say, oh, yeah, well, we think it's kind of here and here. Go for a drive. Mm. And then, but once you're out there, who are you going to talk to? You can't stop a local and say, I'm looking for Buzhkashi.
It's funny because when I was traveling,
I
used to scour about a bit looking for greyhound racing, you know.
And
whippet racing. I raced a whippet and had greyhounds, and I loved the sport for the sport that it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to see it in places less common. Now, I went and saw it in Spain, in Barcelona. It was horrific at one place, the Canadroma de something, literally located wedged between two high-rise buildings in a very bad part of town.
Yeah.
And the only gambling you could do was on exactors.
Oh, yeah.
There were six dogs per field, but cruelly, and the dogs were in terrible condition, very sad to see. Cruelly, in one meeting, there'd be 24 races, and one dog would race three times.
Oh, okay.
Then they had another track in another part of town, which was actually a very nice track, looked very much like Sandown, where they had quality racing. So this was, and the dogs for the Canadromo de something were all trucked in these giant trucks with the pictures of greyhounds on them. It was all horrid.
Yeah.
But in Holland, I had an experience like you. Not that they didn't speak English, but that they didn't know really. Cause I got,
what you were talking about.
Because I saw a poster, there was no computers or internet, talking about greyhound racing in this locale. So I'd written down the details and the time.
Yeah.
And people eventually said, you know, I was in outer suburban Amsterdam. And no, this is a field, you know, this is where they play football and blah, blah, blah. And they said they'll show me where it is. And one guy actually drove me there because I was at the train station.
Yeah.
And he drove me there. And I was happy to. And there was nobody there, but just luckily, just as I was about to leave, somebody turned up with one greyhound. And I thought, well, something.
Yeah, yeah.
And within an hour, they had, with netting and and sticks and a little motorized drag lure, created a
great
greyhound track. The netting was to stop the dogs from absconding into the suburbs if they saw a cat or another dog, I was told. And
that was it?
That one greyhound blossomed into about 110 dogs.
Beautiful.
All racing for ribbons and for the love of the sport. And not all greyhounds.
Oh, okay.
Some Afghans.
Afghan
some
hands.
Lurchers, some half and half, some whippets.
Do they still do the Afghan racing at Broadmeadows? They
used to do it a bit at Albion Park.
Okay.
If you've never seen it, it's languid,
long-haired,
large, hairy, languid greyhounds.
Yes.
Off the SMS, this is good. Kabaddi might be the national sport in Bangladesh around there.
Possibly. Kabaddi, obviously Indian sport, but obviously you've got to contend with cricket and hockey. We'll have to look that up. I would imagine cricket being quite new to Indian hockey being early 1900s. I would have thought field hockey was probably their official national sport, but it's probably cricket nowadays.
I mean, kabaddi to me looks like a game where somebody stole the ball and didn't tell the players.
It's hilarious. You should look up the if people are interested in kabaddi. Yeah, we saw the World Cup earlier this year with a few of the Aussie Rules players. Look up the World Kabaddi League because they have changed the sport. It's on a bigger field. It's hilarious. You've got to see it. It's very funny.
Off the SMS, what's the sport in South America where you play in the top of sports court?
Highlight?
And use a sling, a palotta.
Yeah, it's called Highlight, and it's a betting sport in the States, actually. It's not huge.
It's a betting sport somewhere else because I've got a great story. Yeah. You tell me yours.
You can't operate a casino in Florida unless... You have a live sport.
Do you know what a palotta court is called?
Fronton.
A fronton.
Yes.
Well, my first trip to Barcelona, which I loved, I stayed on Los Ramblas.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And Los Ramblas had a fronton.
Yes, they do.
And they had, and just seeing a sport there that me and my mate jumped in.
Now, is this the highlight against the wall?
Yep.
Or is this the other?
No, it's highlight against the wall.
So
and gambling was done in a very interesting way. They had a tennis ball with a hole cut out, like a square cut out of the top of the tennis ball, and you would place a wager in the tennis ball, and the wager would be the a special slip that you got with what was then some pesos or whatever the Spanish official.
Pesetas,
what the not euros back in the day. And you were given a very small rubber band, and you would roll the rubber band and the thing up, and there were odds.
Yeah.
And you would put it in and then have to throw the ball back to the bookmaker.
Oh, no.
Wherever you were sitting. So you'd throw it back, and if you're a bad throw, somebody would throw it.
Yeah.
And he would acknowledge with his own pen on that slip the odds at the time you placed it.
Yeah.
And then he might have six balls going at any time.
Yeah.
And there were like balls flying around of bets.
Nice.
You'd stay in your seat and just... And it actually was considered... a lack of being high ally savvy.
Yeah.
If you didn't throw the ball back to him on one bounce.
Yeah, sure.
You don't throw it back to him
on the fall. It's got to be one bounce.
He was sort of in a concreted area, and the skill was to throw. So there was actually a skill in betting.
Yeah, of course. He was obviously a one-day international wicketkeeper throughout the 80s and 90s when the ball came in on the first bounce.
We need to take a break. Ended up getting quite friendly with a couple of Americans who played highlight.
Yeah.
And we socialised with them, went on a few days in a row.
Yep.
There's one bad thing about highlight, why I don't like the sport. And when we come back, I'll tell you what that
is.
Welcome back. Now, we're talking about highlight or palotta. Got some great SMSs through.
Yeah.
As people are familiar with these sports, less familiar. In fact, this one has not been mentioned. There's only one country in the world where the national or dominant sport is rugby league.
Oh, I'm thinking, France? No.
PNG.
Of course. Papua New Guinea goes out soon.
But I said, here was this sport. Now, highlight or palotta describes itself as the fastest ball sport in the world because the ball travels. It's a hard ball. It's about the size of between a billiard ball and a tennis ball, I would have thought.
I was actually going to say pool ball size.
Yeah, so Probably a bit bigger.
You reckon? It's
as hard.
Oh, harder.
Just hard.
Well, they say, it travels faster than a golf ball. That's how quick it is.
It is the fastest ball sport in the world.
Yeah.
What players do is with a long, it looks like a giant long...
A wicker scoop.
Yeah, a giant long extension of their arm.
Yeah.
The ball runs down that and they hurl it at... It builds up enormous speed, and you whip it into a side wall, into the front. You basically play with two walls.
Yes.
And you throw it either front on, or to the side. There's one reason why I don't like this sport at all. I am left-handed, and it cannot be played left-handed because for me to play it, I would be hurling the ball into the net through which the spectators watch the game. There's a net on the
spectator side. Yeah.
And there's no provision for throwing it left-handed. You can't do a backhand throw.
Some of the players actually go run the wrong way and then whip around like a hammer thrower or a discus thrower.
Big thing is how they catch it coming back.
It's crazy.
And in doubles, how they use their teammates
no,
to,
exactly.
to ride their teammates. Yep. Like we go for a specky. It's brilliant to watch.
That's it. Talking about national sports, it's the Speedway this Saturday night, Etihad Stadium. One country in the world is national sport is Speedway.
Poland?
Text in. Oh,
that's great. All right, we'll try another method.
Yes, go on then.
Rather than do that.
So I've got two tickets to the Speedway Grand Prix Saturday night, Etihad Stadium. It is going to be phenomenal. They've already sold 20-odd thousand tickets. Jason Doyle could well become World Speedway Champion. So we've got two tickets to give away.
And this will be a bit of a maths question. In every Speedway race, how many wheels are there going around per race?
They're a great question. How many wheels in one heat of Speedway
general? That's right.
Text in straight away, and we will give you two tickets to the Speedway on Saturday night, courtesy of Etihad Stadium. Look, if you don't win the tickets, please, please get along to this event. It is absolutely phenomenal. They've already started building the track. 5,000 tons of dirt got shipped in over the last couple of days into Etihad Stadium. They're building the track right now.
Please put your name with the answer.
Yes.
And two tickets. We'll have two correct answers.
Yep.
Two tickets, and there'll be four tickets given away.
Yep, that's no problem at all.
Now, a final question off the SMS. What is the name of the Turkish national sport with oil wrestling?
Turkish wrestling?
I've seen that. What, it's a great sport.
Yeah.
They wear sort of pants up to their...
Yeah.
There's pants up to your waist.
Yep.
And then... Yeah, a great deal of strength thereafter.
I know it's English, and we would call it oil wrestling. That's what it is.
Men in leather pants, lathered in olive oil.
Yes.
Yeah, first time on his back loses, no time limit, from Reggie in Reservoir. Oil wrestling.
Oil wrestling. That's what it is.
And I know that in Sudan, their national sport, the Nubian warriors have a form of their own wrestling that is ferocious and... Some of the greatest physiques in the world. In fact, some of the great sports photographs of these Nubian warriors wrestling in their national sport of wrestling.
Yeah, national sport of wrestling.
Now, we've had two correct answers.
Yes.
One is from Joanne.
And Tony in Denver Hills. Yes.
And what is the correct answer?
It is Poland. That was the original question.
St. Gerald said Poland.
Gerald, well done. Yes, it is eight. Obviously, four bikes, two wheels. Four times two, if you did your maths homework, is eight.
Beefy, keep an ear out for Beefy Blake every Wednesday night.
Yeah, 11 p.m. till midnight. Myself and Rob Bryce tell you more stories about stuff we did on the road.